Our regular Thursday guest, Eric Francis of the Calgary Sun, Jack FM and Hockey Night in Canada. Hello, Eric.
How are you?
Good, buddy. What? Where do you want to start? Because there are no shortage of things to talk about. Alex Semin signs a one-year, $7 million contract. Shea Weber stays in Nashville. Rick Nash goes to New York. Jim Henderson's going to the majors. Where do you want to start?
Well, I really would be... I can't talk to you and not ask you your thoughts on the UFC. Now, I don't know if you've heard my thoughts, because Andrew and I had a big talk about this last week, or earlier in the week, and I just think, you know, I know things didn't work out for the UFC, but because I consider you to be a UFC, as big an expert on it in the city, do you not think, shame on the UFC for charging all that money and delivering that sort of product? I know they've admitted that it was embarrassing, and they say they're going to make up for it, but how bad do they look that they charge $700 a ticket and wouldn't give anybody a refund and come through with a garbage card like that?
Well, I'll defend them to a point. First of all, I like the fact, and this is the way they've always gone about their business, I like the fact they came out and said, look, we apologize. This was garbage. Yeah. It was embarrassing. But I guess the actual card itself really did have a lot of potential. So I guess I'm more disappointed than I am shame on them, because, look, they had the card changed so many times, but some of the fights that let down should have been really good. Like the Czech Congo, Sean Jordan fight should have been outstanding. The co-main event, Tim Boach and Hector Lombard, should have been potential, you know, up there for one of the fights of the year, because the way that these guys fight, Hector Lombard especially, this should have been a better fight. So I really always felt that their rationale behind making the fights and choosing the matchups they did in a tough situation was sound, and the execution, not on their part, it was kind of on the fighters. And in this case, there was some interesting decisions made by the officials. It almost fell out of their control. So I fully got everybody booing, or a lot of people booing. If you pay your $200, your $500, your $700 to be in the Saddle Dome, and I know you weren't there, but it was full. Like, it was straight up full. There weren't empty seats. You have your right to boo. You have your right to chant refund. You can do whatever you want once you paid your ticket. But I guess I almost feel bad for the UFC, because they really did work their butt off to try and, A, get a good card for Calgary. Then things go totally off the rails, and they have to scramble to put these fights together. They do a really good job, I felt, of putting these reserve fights together, or these replacement fights together that should be exciting, and then totally out of their control, the fighters don't perform. I guess I felt bad for everybody involved. I don't really feel bad for a multi-billion-dollar company, but they're taking this heat, and I'm like, well, I really feel like they tried. For fans, I really do feel bad for the people who paid their money to be there, and there's a lot of people who won't pay that type of money if they come back next time.
I think there are a lot of people who will still pay a considerable amount of money. They'd be insane, the UFC, to come back and charge $700 a ticket. I mean, who the hell does that? U2 doesn't do that. The Rolling Stones wouldn't do that. Madonna wouldn't do that. The biggest acts in the world. And this is just glorified bouncers. Anyway, I'm not going to degenerate it. You know how I feel about UFC. But I was willing to give it a chance. But when you charge $700 a seat to someone for anything in the world, and things change as drastically as they did, people were paying to see those names. I can stomach one or two, or maybe even three guys falling off the card and changing. But at that point, you need to start considering changing your business practice of not giving refunds. There were too many people who wanted refunds and never got them, and they will never forget that. Now, UFC is going to be fine and go on to make billions of dollars everywhere it goes. And you know what? Next time it comes back to Calgary, they'll make a billion more. Not as much, but they'll do well. They'll sell it out. But it just really leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and shame on that promotion for not, you know, realizing that $700 is too much to charge for a bunch of lesser cards than what was originally promoted. That's all I'm saying. We've already spent far too much time talking about UFC, because you know how I feel about it anyway.
But you know what? And we can move on. But the thing is, they don't care. I mean, they care, but they don't have to care, right?
They don't. You're right. It's supply and demand, and the demand is massive. I get that.
But they could never come back to Calgary and not blink an eye. And they could come back to Calgary and do the same thing again, and they'd probably still make money. But I take them at their face value that, yeah, we want to come back next year and we want to deliver a better card. And this is the worst card in history in terms of injuries. There's never been anything like this in the history of 149 events run and then countless more that don't get numbered like that. I mean, it was the worst ever. So they don't have to feel an obligation. They don't have to come back and try and prove it to Cal, but they want to because they've gotten to the level they are for a certain reason. And I will say this. Yeah, the main card stank for a lot of it. The main event, I felt, was really good. But if you were in that building starting at 4:45 when the first fight started, you did get your money's worth. Maybe not your money's worth, but you did get a good night of fights. You got 10 fights on the card. 6 of them, before they went on TV, were really good. Like, a lot of fun to watch. You got one of the fastest KOs in UFC history. You got some really good action and an incredible atmosphere. There still was a lot of good that was accomplished by them here. It just so happened that the 3 of the fights and 2 of them that were extremely highly touted ended up falling way short of the mark. And the best quote that Dana White had on Saturday at the post-fight press conference was, "I was so excited to come in here and shove it up everybody else's behind." I'll paraphrase.
Yeah, exactly. But he didn't. So shame on him, and it's up his ass instead. You know, it got shoved right up his ass, as it should, because they're greedy, borderline criminal, what they did, what they charged people. It's no different than in hockey. You look at a guy like Jay Bouwmeester, and people crush Jay Bouwmeester. He's a solid guy who plays 24, 26 minutes a night. But in this city, he's considered to be, you know, everyone's hoping he gets traded. And why? Because he makes $6.7 million a year. If he made $4 million a year, Jay Bouwmeester would be one of the fan favorites. So everything in this world gets pegged to money.
But what are you gonna?
And they screwed themselves by charging that money. I bet everyone would have had a grand old time if they'd only paid $100 a ticket as opposed to $700.
But people still paid, and people will pay again. And are you gonna sit there and say shame on the Flames if they go out and put a junk product on the ice for a game and somebody paid $300 for a ticket? Do you say shame on the Flames?
You know what you're getting with the Calgary Flames when the season starts. You know that you're going in this year at best hoping for, you know, ninth or tenth place finish this year. So you decide to buy the tickets anyway. When you go to UFC and you pay $700, you're expecting to see an awesome lineup, the hockey equivalent to like the Pittsburgh Penguins or the Philadelphia Flyers. It's different. It's not the same.
If they come back and try and blow them out of the water again, does it change your opinion at all?
If they blow people out of the water by charging exorbitant prices, or if they come back and charge Garth Brooks,
if they charge
$70 top ticket for one of the greatest entertainers of all time,
they charge the same prices everywhere, or similar prices everywhere. I mean, you go to Vegas, you're paying top dollar to be on the floor. You go to L.A., you go to Vancouver, you go to Toronto, you're paying top dollar to be on the floor. It's not as if they came in here and said, you know what, we're jacking Calgary prices up. I mean, they have a pretty set standard of pricing. It's not as if it was all that different in Calgary.
No, exactly. But I'm going to give Dana White credit. Maybe I shouldn't, but I'm going to give him credit. Hey, I love how flamboyant he is. I love how colorful he is. He's great for his sport, and he's obviously a brilliant promoter. He's the modern-day Don King without the hair. But you talk about a guy, he knows that when he comes here next time, he's going to slash prices big. I can't guarantee it, but I actually have faith that he'll do that. Do you?
I don't think he will. Why should he?
Then he's a criminal. Then he's a criminal.
But if he comes and charges the same prices and people buy it, is he a criminal or is he just a good businessman?
Then he's just an opportunist.
Or a good businessman.
But it'll just say a lot about Garth Brooks came here and paid $70 top ticket because it was the right thing to do. It was an awesome thing to do. Not everybody in the world is as good a guy as Garth Brooks. I'll give you that. But I'm just saying, you know, Dana White knows that he owes this city one. And if he comes back here and thinks that he could charge that type of money, that's all I ever need to hear ever again about UFC. Don't forget, wrestling had its heyday, and it was the number one entertainment form in the world for years and years and years, and now it's nowhere. UFC is the flavor of the sporting world right now, the flavor of the, you know, who knows how long it lasts, but it won't last forever. And when it doesn't, people of Calgary will be one of the first ones to turn its back on UFC and realize it's just all about a money grab.
Well, I think you're way off, like way off on that, because wrestling still sells out every building it goes to and still gets and I'm not the hugest wrestling fan, but it still gets millions of people every day on cable on Mondays and Thursdays. It still gets more than a million pay-per-view buys for WrestleMania. To say wrestling's nowhere isn't, but let's move on because I think
compared to its heyday, yeah.
I think it's probably fair to say that we should probably agree to disagree on this point. Eric Francis.
Yeah, let's move on and talk sports.
Okay. Eric Francis is with us from the Calgary Sun, Jack FM, and Hockey Night in Canada. See, and last thing I'll say, take the time to learn about it. Take the time to realize it is a sport, and then you can start to say how much you hate it. But it bothers me when you don't even take the time and you just say, no, it's not a sport. They're criminals. They're stupid. They're bouncers. You know what? Research it for a couple seconds and then spout off. And that's to you and to a lot of other. If you don't like it, that's fine. But like it from a place of education as opposed to a place of ignorance. That's the last thing I'll say about that.
I can't watch it, Pat. It's too violent. Maybe I sound like a wuss. Maybe I would say, yeah, he's a wuss. I cannot watch it. And I'm not saying just because I would never let my kids watch it. I'm saying I don't want to watch it. It sickens me. It makes me sick to my stomach to see the blood. And I know not every match is all about blood. And I know it's real blood. It's not fake wrestling blood. I mean, it's a violent sport, and it's not something I ever want to watch. I'm not that guy when there's a fight in a bar who wants to see what happens. I don't want to watch that sort of stuff. It's too violent.
Eric Francis with us from the Calgary Sun, Jack FM, and Hockey Night in Canada. Hey, good stuff. That's and we'll agree to disagree. I think we both have our bias. We both have our bias on it. Neither of us are coming from a strictly objective standpoint. So you realize that, you agree to disagree, and you move on. I still think you're a quality human being. What about Alex Semin and a one-year, $7 million contract?
That's an interesting one. You know, you got to give kudos to Carolina. They said going into the offseason that they were going to make significant changes and they were going to actually try and turn this thing around pretty quickly. And give them credit, they did. You know, I mean, it's got to be exciting to be a Carolina Hurricanes fan. And I'm not sure I've ever used that sentence in my entire life. But, you know, with Jeff Skinner and Eric Staal and his brother there now, and you had Semin now, he's a coin flip. He really is. Like, he could just as easily score 42 goals this year as he could score 20. And so it's a real gamble, but it's only a gamble. The upside being, if he does have a 40-goal season, then he remembers that. He's probably very happy.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to stay in Carolina, and he'd probably then look at signing a long-term deal to stay in Carolina if everybody's happy. So I don't think it's a horrible thing. I know in the hockey world a lot of people are laughing right now saying, my Lord, how could you sign a guy? That's an example, as somebody said, of someone just looking at numbers and not realizing that the guy has no heart. And I'm not going to argue that mentality, because this guy, you know, has shown many, many cases that he doesn't have a heart. And to get $7 million for a guy whose heart is being questioned, that's pretty scary stuff. But, hey, when you're on the open market and it's a UFA situation, you have to overpay. They clearly overpaid, but is it overpaying if he scores 40-plus goals? I'd argue that it probably isn't.
And can you really overpay if it's a one-year deal? I mean, yeah, you can.
Yeah,
He's making $7 million. He shouldn't be making $7 million. And if it's even a two-year deal, it's a drastic overpay. If that's 2 years, $14 million, you're saying, okay, well, what cereal are these guys on? But now it's 1 year, $7 million. It's tough to overpay on a one-year deal, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. It's an experiment. It's a feeling out process. It's in some ways, it's almost akin to, you know, like the Calgary Flames trading for the rights to negotiate with Dennis Weidman. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, well, at least you knew you gave it a try, and it's not going to work out. So this is, Carolina was an interesting one. If you'd have given me a list of 10 teams that would maybe take a chance on Semin, I wouldn't have included Carolina in that list, but I find it intriguing. And like I said, if you're a fan, you have to reward that organization by, you know, buying season tickets if you're at all a fan, or at least buying tickets to see it several games, because that's you're taking a risk, but you're doing it, you're willing to spend the money, and you're willing to pay the price. I think it's commendable.
So here's a question. Should the Nashville Predators have matched Shea Weber's offer sheet with the Philadelphia Flyers? Eric will pick up on that after the break. Eric Francis with us from the Calgary Sun, Jack FM, and Hockey Night in Canada joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Shea Weber signed a 14-year, $110 million offer sheet with the Philadelphia Flyers that if there's any way possible, the Nashville Predators have to match it. They did on Tuesday. Eric Francis continues with us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Tank Hotline from the Calgary Sun, Jack FM, and Hockey Night in Canada. But did they do the right thing in your eyes, Eric?
Yeah, I think they did. You know, I wish they didn't do it because it sure would have made Philadelphia an exciting... Philadelphia's already an exciting team to watch, but it would have made them even more exciting. You know, I think it would have instantly thrust them into favorites to compete for the Stanley Cup, but Nashville to me is boring. They'll continue to be boring even with Shea Weber. But it would have made Philadelphia all so exciting, and they would have been instantly one of the Stanley Cup favorites. I would have liked to have seen that, but you know, my gut says Philadelphia will still be a Stanley Cup favorite anyway.
So what does Nashville have to do to not be boring old Nashville in your eyes?
Well, they got to get some offensive talent. You know, they've always gotten by being solid defensively and playing a defensive first game. And they could do that when they had the defensive talent that they've got, not just in Weber and Suter, but some of the other guys. And then Pekka is a great goaltender. You know, who's their marquee forward? I mean, who is it right now? As a matter of fact, I'll ask you this. Ask the average hockey fan if he could name two forwards with the Nashville Predators right now. And I bet you the only one that they could come right away is Mike Fisher. And he's not exactly prolific. He's a good guy, and he's great in the community, and he probably sells tickets too. But you know, guys who can score goals in bunches, and you know, they're just not an exciting team. Like, you can't disagree with that.
No, I mean, I don't get jacked up for Nashville-Calgary matches at the Saddle Dome. I'm not going to lie about that. I mean, from a hockey standpoint, oh, I get to go see the pairing of Suter and Weber. It's cool. But no. They do not bring in the same type of buzz that the Flyers do. When the Flyers came through town for their one and only meeting this year with the Flames, it was a buzz. Claude Giroux, Jaromir Jagr, the Philadelphia Flyers. There's no question about it. And you know, I know that you got into it a little bit with Kerr last week on this same thing. And you know, yeah, Nashville is not a marquee place in terms of excitement. It's not a marquee place that you say, man, wouldn't it be cool to see that player? I mean, remember when Peter Forsberg went to Nashville? It wasn't as if you're like, yeah, Peter Forsberg in Nashville, this is going to be awesome. Peter Forsberg goes to Philly, you know, 4 months later, and you're like, Peter Forsberg in Philly, now that's cool. So yeah, you're bang on about that.
Yeah, and I know one thing that Kerr was kind of saying was, isn't it, you know, I don't like it for the NHL that he's staying in Nashville, but his argument is, well, it's good for the NHL that some stars will stay in these lesser-known cities or these not as exciting cities, because, you know, if at least Weber didn't stay, there'd be actually absolutely nothing to get excited about or cheer for. So, but I just look at it. There are always going to be a handful, if not maybe a third of the league, of teams that are just not, that don't do a damn thing for you or I as the viewer. You know, like with the hockey package that so many diehard fans have nowadays, you tell me how many times you've ever tuned in to watch the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, you tell me how many times you've watched the Florida Panthers in the last 2, 3, 4 years. Now, things are changing in both of those cities. Things are starting to get a little more exciting, as they are in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. You know, God help you if you wanted to watch an Edmonton game 2 years ago or 3 years ago. But now things are changing. So everything's cyclical, and maybe one day the Nashville Predators will be exciting. And you got to give endless credit to David Boyle and Barry Trotz, and a million people have said this before, for keeping that team competitive when it doesn't look like every single year it looks like, wow, they don't have the horses. Mm-hmm. And every single year they're right there in a playoff spot or challenging for one. So give them credit, feel sorry for them, but it would have been better, I think, if Weber would have gone to Philadelphia. I would have liked to have seen that.
I was crunching some numbers today about offer sheets, and we were racking our brains yesterday. I'm like, okay, when was the last time a guy actually went to a new team and his parent team didn't match? And the last time was Dustin Penner going from Anaheim to Edmonton. The time before that was 1997 when Chris Gratton went from Tampa Bay to Philly. So we're talking about in the last 15 years, there have been 10 offer sheets signed. Only two of them have ended up with a player changing locales. Eight the eight other times the team has stepped up and matched. And I guess especially post-lockout, there's been seven, and there's only been one guy who's changed teams, and that was because it was really, if you look back on it, how ridiculous is Edmonton's contract to Dustin Penner? It still doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, Penner was great for the Kings in the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But the contract that he signed was never going to be a great one with the Edmonton Oilers. But I guess it got me thinking, why don't we see more of them? Well, I think we don't see more of them because post-lockout in a cap era, we're talking about teams that need to keep their picks. They need to keep their draft picks. They need to be most accountable to the guys in their organization and who they're developing. That's why I think you've seen less of them.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's the reason why. I mean, teams need to protect their assets, right? I mean, you can't just let them go for, you know, what kind of a return really would it have been had they got four first-rounders from Philly? I mean, those are all going to be late-round picks, right?
Yeah.
Are those really going to help you? I mean, Philly's going to be a juggernaut for some time, especially with Weber in their lineup. So, I you know, you're collecting that. But the one thing I got to tell you that I almost threw up in my mouth when I was reading this the other day, and Jared Paquette is one of the agents for Shea Weber. And
yes.
God bless him. I mean, he's doing his job, and he's good at his job. He's a former Mount Royal Cougar, and he's a good guy. But when I was reading the other day, you know, them kind of positioning that, you know, it would really cushion the landing. Those are the exact words. It would cushion the landing if the Nashville Predators would add a no-trade clause to this contract. Because, you know, Shea's committed 14 years of his life to this organization now, and it would be nice if they, you know, made the commitment back and added a no-trade clause so he could be certain, you know, as to where he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? Again, he's doing his job and he's fighting for his guy. And I guess if he was my agent, and Lord knows if I was in that same situation, I'd want the same thing. But really, you just signed the second biggest contract in NHL history and you want to cushion the landing? You want some certainty in your life? You want to add to that deal? Like, come on. These are the sort of things in the world of sports that turn the casual fan off when they hear stuff like that. It is absolutely ludicrous and asinine, and I would just be beside myself if the Nashville Predators voluntarily, because they don't have to do it, if they voluntarily decided to add that to the deal. I can't see it happening. Can you?
Well, what if they don't? I mean, there's already many who think that the relationship's already fractured between these two. That they already, okay, so they can't trade him for 1 year. There's a no-trade clause effectively in place for the next season. But a lot of people think that this is already fractured, that Shea Weber wanted to go to Philadelphia. I don't buy it myself, but what if they don't add that no-trade clause? Does it potentially add to that fractured relationship that a lot of people think there is?
Well, if that's the case, then at the end of the year, you get some pretty good assets in return, better than the four first-round picks, which would be 26th, 27th overall, would have been offered up. So you trade them then. At least you tried. You made the best of a bad situation. You signed them for 1 year. You spent your, Lord knows, I can't remember what the numbers are, but some atrocious amount of number in the next calendar year, whether we play hockey or not. Then you part ways with them. Then it's simple. Then it's an easier sell, too, to your fans that, wait a second, this guy got handed one of the biggest contracts in the history of sport, and his nose is a little bit joint, or he doesn't feel like he's welcome here, or things just aren't working. Well, then good riddance. Then it's easy to package him up and say, you know, we can get someone who wants to be here, or a couple assets, or three or four assets, as opposed to one superstar defenseman who isn't wholeheartedly bought into, I want to stay in Nashville because my nose is out of joint because I didn't get a no-trade clause added. Come on. This is all about, you know, selling it to the fans, right? Like I said earlier, I don't think they would have re-signed him I don't think they would have signed him to the deal and kept him if they thought their fans wouldn't revolt. But, you know, it's a totally different situation if all of a sudden he makes the fans angry, and he could easily do that if he says, things aren't working out here.
Eric Francis with us, Calgary Sun, Jack FM, Hockey Night in Canada. One thing I know that you wanted to bring up, and it was something that really struck me on Monday when we saw the package that Rick Nash got Columbus in return in that deal that sent him to the New York Rangers. Somebody brought it up on Twitter, and then somebody also emailed, said, is this not maybe a good indication of what Jerome Iginla might get on the open market? And obviously there are differences. Nash is 7 years younger than Jerome Iginla and all that type of... Jerome Iginla scored 50 goals twice in his career. Rick Nash has never done that, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a fair comparison in some ways, in that here's a marquee player getting dealt, and a lot of people think that Columbus didn't get anywhere near what they should have for a guy like Rick Nash. It's a fair comparison. It could be a comparable to if the Calgary Flames were to ever sit down and think about trading Jerome Iginla, it might be a good cautionary tale.
Exactly. It's completely relevant. I mean, I know they're different players. They're at different stages of their careers. The upside of, you could argue as to what the upside of both guys is. And then you also add the leadership component and you add what position they, it is absolutely relevant. And it at the very least, it's got to stop people with this pie in the sky kind of theory that if you trade Jerome Iginla now, you can still land, you know, a couple superstars or young superstars or great young prospects or, you know, basically start rebuilding your entire organization based off of one trade by adding some young, real studs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great point. It's the point that a lot of people came up with right away. Geez, if Rick Nash is worth that, what's Jerome Iginla worth? Because I think in many people's mind, the answer to the question would be, I think that I'd rather have Rick Nash than Jerome Iginla based on age, and based largely on age, really, when you think about it.
Yeah.
So, and the stages of their career. But, it is the one thing that you got to remember, if they did trade Jerome Iginla, though, I think you'd get more than you would right now if you do it at the trade deadline, because then you've got five or six teams who think they're really close, think this is our year, and that final piece of the puzzle, like a former superstar or a current superstar who's a great leader in the room, who could play a secondary role, maybe on a second line. I think you get more for Jerome Iginla at the trade deadline than you would right now. That would be the argument. And a lot of people in the hockey world said they made a huge mistake by not trading Rick Nash at the trade deadline when teams were a lot hungrier and desperate because they were that close than trading him now. I thought they would get more value now. But clearly, I don't think that's the case.
Well, and the last thing I'll say about this, I've always found the comment that says the Calgary Flames need to trade Jerome Iginla for the organization to move on. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense at this point, because you're going to get very little back. Or in comparison to what he means to the organization, you're just not going to get that back. And are you willing to take that risk as a fan? I don't know. I don't know if I would. So that argument, it's not going to set the organization up for years to come. At this point, I don't think you're getting the next Jerome Iginla. We're not talking about the torch being passed like it was from Nieuwendyk and then to Iginla.
Yeah.
I don't think you're seeing that this time around, because the guy's 35 years old. It's a little bit different in this climate and with his age.
Totally agree. And, you know, people that don't live in this market or media members that write nationally or from the States, I look at this situation, and they're always, always pushing for the Flames to trade Jerome Iginla. And I vehemently argued against it. I was starting, though, to come onto the other side and think that maybe they needed to. I certainly think that this team needs an overhaul, more so than obviously the current ownership and management believe they do. And a lot of fans think that, too. But I do think that, honestly, the Rick Nash trade was so significant in that vein that I am totally on board now for saying it would be a big mistake if the Calgary Flames traded Jerome Iginla in the next 3 or 4 years, because he means that much to this city, that much to this organization, and the owners know that. You know, they've always kind of been of that thought, that Jerome Iginla is going to retire a Calgary Flame, and we want their way for it to end. And I think that's the way it's going to play out. And I honestly now, in light of the Rick Nash trade, I think that's the way it should play out.
Good stuff, man. Appreciate you stopping by. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, man. Just so you know, just because we disagree on UFC doesn't mean I want to fight you. You're a lot tougher than I am, and we'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, because I was going to set up I was going to call Dana White and see if we could maybe get on the next card. But
get
okay, you've clarified.
Yeah,
clarified.
Exactly. people pay $700 to see us fight? I don't think so.
They might pay $700 to see one of us beat the other one up, though.
That's true. I know that a lot of people would love to pay a lot of money to see me beat up. There's no doubt about that.
If there's a few that I think might fall into that same category with me, too. So, yeah, I think that you might get a few. Maybe not a sellout of a building, though. Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, buddy. Cheers.
Eric Francis from the Calgary Sun, Jack FM, Hockey Night in Canada.